Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back, Sports to the Max. Welcome back, News Talk 830. Welcome back, WCCO. Minnesota Gophers with a big game on Saturday. Ricky Foggy, the great quarterback there, at one point in time, won't be there because he'll be helping coach a different team. More on that in a minute. But the Fog Man joins us now. I haven't talked to you for a bit, Ricky. How are you?
Hey, Mike, I'm good, man. A little chilly tonight.
Chilly.
Football practice, but I survived.
What was it like when you came up to Minnesota the first winter? What do you remember about that coming from Carolina?
Yeah, I remember my recruiting trip when I came up. It was in January, and my mom forgot to give me a winter coat. I didn't have one. And I got off the plane, it was probably about 20 degrees. And Coach Palermo, who was waiting for me, said it wasn't an option of going back.
That's what he said?
That's what he said. So I had to stick it out.
Who were you being recruited by? A lot of schools at that time? What was that process like?
Oh, it was fun. I had probably about four or five schools that was recruiting me. Coach Palermo was recruiting me hard from East Carolina. I actually had verbally committed to the University of North Carolina, the Tar Heel, before I eventually changed my mind to commit to Minnesota, which was definitely the right move. And I had a couple more schools in the South that was recruiting me also.
Was North Carolina going to make you a quarterback or a D-back? Which one?
They said it was going to give me a chance to play quarterback, but I really wasn't sold on it. And so it kind of swayed me to have to sit down and talk to my parents and talk to my high school coach and make the decision to come to Minnesota.
So you get here, and there's this coach by the name of Lou Holtz, and he brings you into the office on your recruiting visit and says what?
It's pretty much he was looking for an option quarterback. That's exactly what I had read in high school. And then once we got to our fall camp when I came in for college, they put me at running back for a couple of days, tried me out at wide receiver for a couple of days, threw me back at defensive back for a couple of days, and then he finally came back around and put me back at quarterback, where I told him from the get-go, that's where I belong, and pretty much history after that.
Is that unusual for many kids to get moved around that much during a preseason practice? Is that standard in college for a freshman in particular?
Well, his deal was he recruited a lot of athletes, and so he put a lot of guys at different positions to see where they sit was. So I wasn't upset or wondering if he was going to give me a shot at quarterback, but I was pretty athletic in my younger days, and they wanted to see what was going to be my best fit, and thank goodness they sent it at quarterback.
Now, this year, obviously, there's a lot of buzz about the Gophers, 8-0, et cetera, and would P.J. Fleck stay or not? Would it heat up for people that might want him, et cetera? Take me back to when Holtz left Minnesota, before my time in the media for sure. What happened from a player's standpoint? Were you guys hearing rumors that he might go to Notre Dame? Did it shock you? What was it like when you found out Lou Holtz was leaving you?
No, we really didn't hear any rumors. We were so focused on the season. We was having a pretty good season. We was bowl bound, going to the Independence Bowl. And then, all of a sudden, it was pretty sudden. It came back that Coach Holtz had agreed to take over the Notre Dame job. But I think the most important thing for us, all of his assistant coaches stayed. So the guys that actually did the recruiting that got us to come here to the University of Minnesota, they were still here. My quarterback coach, Coach Beckish, he remained on the staff. And so everything pretty much stayed intact for us. They hired defensive coordinator Coach John Gutekunst, and so it was a smooth transition for us as players. There's no doubt we missed Coach Holtz because of his electricity and all the energy that he brought. into the program and helped getting the program changed around. But, you know, it was just that deal that he wanted, for some weird reason, wanted to coach at Notre Dame.
Yeah, and he got it. He got it in his contract, and I've talked to him about it since. He said he was ready to take that out of his contract, and the president basically stood him up for a meeting one day, and he said, okay, it's in. I'm going if it, and it happened. Now, you and Lou had a pretty special relationship, quarterback to head coach. Do many players get that opportunity to get to know the head coach, or do most players just know the assistant coaches?
No, I think Coach Host was an extraordinary coach. He got to have a relationship with a special relationship with all the players. You know, just me, just so happened to be the starting quarterback, and I think I was a little closer than most of the guys. But no, he bonded with everybody. I think that was the one thing that made him such a great coach, is that he sat down to get to know each and every player that was on his football team. And he didn't treat anybody any special ways. He didn't treat me better than he would have, you know, treated the guy that was on the third string. So I didn't get any special favors because I was the starting quarterback from him. You know, he was a genuine coach who cared about his players and wanted us to do the right thing on and off the field.
Now, as the story goes, I've heard it from him. I don't know if I've heard it from you. Was you end up having kind of a breakout freshman season as a quarterback. And obviously, Lou's just got there. Now he's going to recruit his second year. You're late to get in the class together for the first year. And he calls you into the office and he says, Ricky, I just want you to understand one thing. I am intent on going out and recruiting a quarterback that's even better than you to come in here next fall. And you looked at him and you said, good luck, coach. Is that true?
That definitely sounds like something I would say.
It might be true, huh?
It might be true. And he did. I don't know. He went out and recruited another kid from the state of South Carolina, which was Tony Rice, who I actually had played against.
That's right. And then because he went to Notre Dame, he didn't bring him with, right?
Right. He took Tony with him. So it's yet to be known if Tony was better than I was, but you have to give it to the guy. He did win a national championship at the University of Notre Dame.
Yes, he did. Now, do you see much of Fleck and Holtz? I mean, do they remind you of each other at all?
I think so. The energy. I think both of them have had a great plan. Coach Holtz had a great plan. I think Coach Fleck has a great plan. You know, as we was players, you know, we were 17, 18-year-old kids. We thought at that time Coach Holtz was probably in his, you know, 50s and 60s, but he was actually a young man.
Yeah, you didn't realize he wasn't old. It just feels like it when you're in college, right?
Right. Well, you know, being the head coach and the respect that we gave him, we thought he was an older guy, but he was actually pretty young. But, no, I think the energy that they bring, I think that the way they get their players to play hard for – four quarters, and, you know, the finish games. It's a different era, for sure, when we played in the mid-80s than what the kids have to go through and put up with these days with social media and all that stuff, and what head coaches have to be so aware of these days. It's just different. But I think from just football standpoint, they know how to get the kids to play hard and go out and do their job and not make mental errors and go out there and play for four quarters. Is very similar.
Here's the similarity that I see, but you know more about it than I. People's perception of both would be high energy, rah-rah guys, give a big pep talk. And the reality of both is completely committed to details and intolerant of mistakes or turning the ball over or penalties. I see that as those two where they're more akin. I think most people from the outside would say they're rah-rah guys. They give big speeches and stuff. But what I see, both of them very committed to the fundamentals and really intolerant of stupid mistakes. Is that accurate?
Oh, yeah, that's very accurate. And I think, you know, people that haven't played football at a high level doesn't understand what a coach has to do to get his players prepared and ready to play. If people perceive Coach Fleck as being a rah-rah guy, you know, just talks a lot, it doesn't even matter what people think outside that building over at the University of Minnesota. If those kids are buying in and they're 8-0 at this point, he's actually doing something right, and he's actually doing it pretty well. So, you know, people are never going to be satisfied. You know, they always pick and try to find something wrong with the program. That team is 8-0. Let's get behind Coach Fleck and his players, and let's go out and beat Penn State on Saturday.
Now, you are coaching for Dan O'Brien at St. Thomas Academy, working with quarterbacks and much more, and you guys have had a pretty good season, too. And now you get a rematch with Owatonna on Saturday, the team you lost to in the Prep Bowl. Tell me about this week, because I understand Owatonna, who had a great running back last year, was not the university that got hurt, but I understand they've abandoned that offense, and now they're going spread offense, huh?
Yeah, when they lost a pretty good running back last year in Williamson, but they didn't fall off. I tell you, I think they're 9-0 at this point, haven't lost a game in almost 3 years, and so they're a very confident football team, well coached football team, and so we got to go out and definitely bring our A game and a little bit more to be able to upset this team on Saturday afternoon.
And how much do you enjoy? You've been coaching at the high school level for some time now, Park Center, Red Wing, now here. How much do you enjoy that one-on-one trying to make a kid better?
Oh, it's fun. I think the main focus on these kids that I put in the coaches, and when I'm coaching is, you know, you have to be a positive influence on the kid. It's not about the X and O. Everybody can draw up a play. But how do you get a kid to come to practice after school and want to work hard for 2 days, 2 hours.
Yeah.
You know, that's very difficult to do. But so you have to give them a positive influence, incentives to have them come out and play and work for you. And then to go out and sacrifice his body on Friday night, you know, for 48 minutes in a football game. So it's not about X and O. And the joy I get out of it is teaching these kids, watching them take it in, and going out and performing on Friday nights to the best of their abilities. And wins and losses is not big in my book, but what the thing that encouraged me the most to keep coaching is when these kids come back and go, hey, Coach Foggy, appreciate everything you've done for me, and you've made me grow into a good young man. And so that's what it's all about for me.
What's the hardest part about trying to develop or teach a high school quarterback?
Hardest part?
Yeah.
Well, the first thing I had to get over was, you know, I was a quarterback, and so I can't look at these kids and go, well, you got to be better than me, you know. So no, for me as an individual coach, I look at the strengths and I look at his weaknesses, and so what I do is work on his weaknesses. If it's his drops, he needs to get better at. If it's his reading the defense, he needs to get better at. If this is ball accuracy, he needs to get better at. Find what he's not good at and make him better in that department, and then he'll slowly come along to be a complete quarterback and just be a leader. You know, I always tell my kids on the quarterback position, you don't have to go out there and talk and cheer these guys, but you do, once you get in that huddle, you got to be the man and you got to be able to perform on the football field.
Do you think, can you teach a kid to be a good decision maker? I mean, you know, whether running the option or you're trying to read your progressions and check down all those things as a passer, can you teach a kid to be a good decision maker, or do they either pick that up or they don't?
No, you can. It's just like classwork, you know, just like in the classroom. You got to be able to talk to these kids and over film study. You got to be able to show them on the field. It's repetition. You got to be able to rep it until they get it right. I always tell my kids that, you know, if they're not getting it right, it's not the kid's fault. It's the coach's fault because he's not teaching them right. Because kids, they'll do whatever you ask them to do as long as they believe in you. So if you're teaching them the right way, they'll eventually get it. But like I told them, I tell my kids, if you're not getting it done right, then trust me, that backup quarterback, he wants to get his shot.
Yeah, and you're trying not to create fear. You're trying to create confidence, right?
Oh, yeah. No, fear that doesn't even work for me. You know, the guy knows my personality. You know, I'm a happy-go-lucky coach. And so, no, it's all positive. I call it PMA, positive mental attitude. I don't yell at my kids. You know, it's teaching. It's just like being in a classroom. You walk them through it, make sure they know what they're doing, and put them out there and let them be successful. And they're not, you know, no kid, nobody's perfect. So they're going to make mistakes. So you don't yell at a kid or bench a kid because he made a mistake. You go over that mistake and hopefully he doesn't make it again and just go out there and let him be, play some ball.
Coach O'Brien give you a lot of freedom or is he tough on you guys?
I am pleading the fifth to that question. Nice try, Mike.
Whatever it is, it's worked the last 2 years. You guys have only lost one game.
No, he is. Coach Coach O'Brien does a great job with our football program. He got these kids in line. You know, he's got his rules and his guidelines, and these kids follow him. And it is. It's translating over to the football field and how we're being able to play. We play hard. Our defense plays hard, plays fast. Our offense, we like to run the ball. Be physical, and we got a couple receivers that can get down the field. So hopefully that can continue to work for us on Saturday.
Ricky, appreciate it very much. Always good to visit with you, and good luck on Saturday.
Hey, thanks, Mike. It's always a pleasure.
You bet. Ricky Foggy, nice enough to join us. We come back, a story about Lou Holtz you have probably never heard before. Stay with us.
Sports to the Max.
Welcome back, Sports to the Max. The Gophers are taking on, as Ricky Foggy and I talked about, they're going to play on Saturday against Penn State. Both those teams undefeated at 8-0. And, I like Minnesota's chances. I think they got a good chance to beat. This is a good Penn State team. It's not a great, great Penn State team. And we'll see. But we now welcome all of you watching us on Facebook Live, and we're going to reveal to you where the Gophers stand in the college football playoff rankings. They are 17th overall, just revealed. 17th, so actually not as high as they are in the AP poll. Wisconsin, Michigan, Penn State, and all ahead of them. Iowa right behind them at 18th. But the Golden Gophers come in at 17th, which is, you know, there's so many teams that are undefeated. Baylor, SMU's at 25. Baylor's only 11, and they're 8-0. And so that tells you about the strength of the right now college football. It's the haves and the have-nots this year. But the Gophers come in at 17 overall college football playoff, which doesn't get you anywhere near that four spot, that four that you need to get in. So this is just another extension of rankings anywhere else. And, you know, it has more to do with who plays in that top four. But obviously no one expected the Gophers to be anywhere near that final four. The only way you get there is to go through Ohio State and win the Big Ten title, or for sure Penn State this week. So they've announced it. They've revealed that the Gophers are 17 overall at 8-0, but there's so many teams. You look at number 9, Oklahoma, 7-1. Utah, number 8, is 8-1. Oregon, number 7, is 8-1. That gives you an idea of the caliber of teams that are out there that are between the Gophers and the number 4 overall that would get you into the college football playoffs. So we'll keep you updated on who else finishes where, but the only thing I think people in these parts want to know is where are the Gophers right now. 17th overall in the college football playoff ranking. Sports to the Max and WCCO. Thanks for watching on Facebook Live as well. When we come back, we'll talk high school football with one of the most funkiest, strangest, coolest offenses you'll ever see. And this coach that brought it here to Minnesota and said, we're going to reverse engineer this thing and find ways to win by doing it, not by being pass happy, but by handing off on every down. We'll explain when we come back.
Sports to the Max.
Welcome back, Sports to the Max. To finish out the college football rankings, Ohio State goes number 1 overall. Number 4 is Penn State. What that really means is today, if they played the final four football, they'd play each other, which won't happen because they could play each other. They will play each other before then, and one will fall in the rankings, if that all makes sense to you. So it means something, but eventually it would be hard for those two to both be in at 1-4. Possible, it's just hard to do it. Joining us right now, the head coach at Elk River High School, Steve Hamilton. He's got a great story to tell. His team back in the state playoffs, they'll take on Moorhead coming up on Saturday. So they won't see the Gopher game either, but they'll be ready to roll. Coach, thank you for joining us tonight.
And no problem. Thanks for having me.
As you know, I've long been a fan and fascinated of your offense and how you did it conceptually. Not growing up here, you moved to town here. And explain, how did you end up taking the job at Elk River in the first place?
Well, when my wife and I, when I took a job in Georgia, we didn't have any kids. So we didn't have family down there. It wasn't a big deal. But we had our two girls, and my family had moved to the Twin Cities. So it just, after we had had our second daughter and I had a tragic event with my sister being killed, we just thought we wanted to be close to family. So I interviewed at a couple spots, had a couple offers, and I just thought Elk River was the right fit for me.
And so you decided to move up here, and when something like that happens paramount in your life, is that the first thing you think about is, I only get so many days here and I want to spend it close to my family?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it really, you know, unfortunately, when my sister was killed, she had five kids, and the three youngest were adopted by my oldest sister, who lives in Minneapolis also. So we just really thought, you know, we wanted to be close to family, close to Debbie's kids, and have them part of our daughter's lives. So, yeah, it really kind of changed our thinking, being down there and being away from family. And once that happened, we just wanted to be close to as many people as we could that we knew and loved.
And so you end up with this job, and it's still, I got some good news for you, and I got some bad news for you. When they offer you a football coaching job and be in the faculty as you wanted, we haven't won a lot of games of late, like none lately. So you come in, and you see Elk River, and you know its proximity to the Twin Cities, et cetera, and you do what first when you're taking over a program that's really having a tough time?
Well, I think the big thing is, you know, I had to meet with the staff and meet with the coaches, and a lot of them are Elk alums, so, you know, they are diehard about Elk River, and we just had to kind of say, hey, whatever's happened here is in the past. It's a fresh start. It's a fresh start for all of you. It's a fresh start for all the players, whatever relationship you've had with them. If there's been bad relationships, we're going to start over. And, you know, because we're starting, you know, pretty much at ground zero, and I think they'd lost 16 games in a row and had some tough times. But that was also part of the appeal to me, is that I knew that if I came in and we had any success, it would be really easy to get buy-in.
So Coach Hamilton rolls up his sleeves, and he said, and normally what happens if you follow football, really at the high school and college level for sure, is when a team wants to appeal to or recruit student athletes to come out for the team, they throw the ball all over the field. They say, doesn't this look fun? We're going to throw it. And if you're a receiver, if you're a basketball player, come on out because you'll catch the ball and this and that. You said, we're going to do just the opposite of that. We're going to run the football, much like a passing tree, and it's going to be a running tree, and we're going to hand the ball off, and we're going to be really good at the way we handle the football. That would be counter to what a lot of people think. How do you sell that message?
Well, I think that's another part of the appeal to Elk River to me is once I was hired by John Barth, who was the AD, he wouldn't give me film until I agreed to take the job. When I got film, you know, I saw and I had heard that they were spread, and that's why I knew this was an easy sell, because they were really struggling as the spread throwing the ball around.
So they knew they had exhausted that theory.
Yeah. I mean, and people saw the ball getting thrown a lot, but they didn't see any results from it. So for me, it was easy because I thought we could come in here and, yes, we're going to run the ball 99.5% of the time or whatever it is. But we're going to get first downs and we're going to score points. And then, you know, once we started having success, the buy-in is pretty easy. Now, there's still kids that would love to be receivers, and we try to convince them to be, you know, great defensive backs for us. But I've bought into the system for, I don't know, 15 years now. And I just know that if you can run the ball well in high school and you can play good defense against the run, you have a chance to win.
For sure. So now you start to identify, basically, you're getting everybody you can off of the team, and I would imagine you're eyeballing them. It doesn't matter what position they played in the past. It could be different. I mean, you could have a running back that's now your quarterback. You could have a middle linebacker that's now your running back, depending on how they run and how they fit into this scheme, huh?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I just thinking back to when I first got film and I saw slot receiver number 12, and I told him, this is going to be our quarterback next year, and his name's Corey Collins, which, long story short, he's back teaching and coaching for us now. And, and you know, they kind of looked at me, someone looked at me like, he's not a quarterback. But, you know, I knew he was a fit for what we wanted to do. And, you know, it's really cool to have him on the staff. But, yeah, you got to look at the attributes and say, okay, where can we use that best in what we do? And we've done a good job. And the coaching staff here is really amazing. I mean, most of these guys were here when I got here, were part of the staff before, and they just work so hard and they do a really good job.
They made the transition with you. Huh? That's unusual.
They did. You know, it's different. Obviously, if we're in college, you can bring in a whole staff.
Yeah.
Well, when you're talking about a high school, you know, you want to have people in the building that are building relationships and see the kids every day, can keep track of grades. And so a lot of these guys are teachers in the building. Like I said, 8 or 9 of them are Elk River alums. So I knew they wanted what was best for the school.
And to teach this offense, is difficult or not, is it no different than teaching any other offense?
I think the difficulty comes in the complexity up front. I think if you just want to learn, like our first year, we just ran very basic trap, power, and keep. And, you know, that's, we spent the summer on just that. But, you know, when you get into what our 9th year here now and, you know, 17, 18 different ways to run off tackle and run power, I mean, there is some complexity there that takes some learning. And you know, the guru, John Shillito from Michigan, that, you know, I really got it from, and he's helped me along the way. He always felt it, but the third year, you know, your coaches really start to understand it. Your kids really start to understand it.
How far down the food chain do you go with this? Do you go to the youth programs, the 5th and 6th and 7th grade teams, and say, this is how I want, this is what I want you to teach?
You know, when I meet with the youth coaches and the youth parents, the big thing to me is just, I want to make sure the kids come out and they have fun. And our 8th grade coach, Mike Brown, has been here the whole time I have. And he's actually, I still have emails from when I was in Georgia because he was the Booster Club president. He was the first person I contacted about the job. But he's bought in, and that's all they do in 8th grade. 7th grade kind of depends. They get new parents every year, so some are more into running it than others, and I don't push it. You know,
okay, so you don't say, this is the way we do things now, Elk River, run it this way.
No, to me it's about if they can make it fun and make the kids want to come back for football, they've done their job.
And fun being the key word. What usually, I mean, does success create fun, or can you have fun just in conceptually because you enjoy the process?
Well, I think just we got a bunch of coaches and kids that enjoy being around each other, so we have fun every day. And certainly winning, you know, is fun. There's no doubt on that. But that's one night a week. You still have the other days. And I've been part of losing programs, and we still tried to make it fun and enjoyable for the kids. And they came back, and they always had good, positive things to say. And to me, that's what this is about. It's a relationship business. And we've always built our program that we're going to have really good relationships with our kids.
Now, it's one more game in U.S. Bank Stadium. You've been there before. Does your offense thrive more on a frozen tundra, so to speak, that could be a little bit this Saturday, or does it matter to you?
Well, you know, I think we're actually better with better footing. One of the things when you get 22 bodies really tight together, you got to have some good footing to move some people. And we usually do a good job. So we're usually better on turf. But I know, obviously, the spread teams love it, too, because they don't have any wind or anything to deal with. And, you know, we're hoping for a little bit of that because Moorhead, Trey Feeney, Kevin Feeney, the head coach, is
Kevin Feeney was the player. He's a quarterback at North Dakota State, yeah.
Yeah, and this kid is, you know, he's talented. And they've gone a whole lot of 5 wide and throwing just about every play. So it'll be 2 drastically different approaches for sure.
All right. Steve, appreciate it very much. Always enjoy talking to you. Continued success and congratulations on all that you've done there.
Hey, I love when you call me because that means we're actually winning.
That means it's November, yeah. Thanks, Coach.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
You bet. Steve Hamilton, head coach. It's amazing to me to see. It's just so different than I ever thought you could build a football program that way. By telling kids, hey, we're going to run the football every play. Come on out. You can either be a blocker or you can be the guy that we fake it to, or you might be the guy that gets to carry it. We don't know. And he got that to happen. It just, I mean, transformed it, not overnight, but within a couple of years. So I got sidetracked on the Lou Holtz story that I was going to tell because they came out with the college football rankings. They had Gophers 17 overall, college playoff rankings, Penn State 4, Ohio State 1. Iowa's right behind the Gophers, I believe. Michigan's ahead of them, et cetera. So they got a ways to go if they want to play themselves into that Final Four, but that'll take care of itself. So when Jerry Kill was, when Tim Brewster was let go by the Minnesota Gophers, they're looking for a coach. A guy gets a hold of me one day and he says, Lou Holtz is interested in the job. Lou is about 75 at this time. And I said, come on now. Now, I'd been with Lou down there and done a story with him down in Orlando. He's got a great place. He said, no, I'm telling you, Lou Holtz is interested in this job. He said, I've talked to him and I'm going to have him call you because I want you to hear him out. And then you can decide whether or not you want to carry that message or not. And sure enough, phone rings. It's Lou, and we chatted. And he was game ready. He wasn't going to ask for a big salary. He was just ready to go. He was ready to coach his team. Whatever he had an idea, unfinished business in Minnesota. This is what we do. Blah, blah, blah. We'll get the high school coaches behind us. We'll do this, this, and that. It was an amazing conversation that I had with him. You know, when you're done, you're like, hey, coach, can I sign up and play for you? Whatever it is that you're coaching. It was that kind of conversation. Now, ultimately, they went with Jerry Kill. And I don't know that Lou would have ever been in the running because of his age and because he had left on bad terms with the University of Minnesota because he left in the middle of the night to Notre Dame, although that was in his contract. And they could have kept him here. Had they just he would not have had the Notre Dame clause in there. Had a president not stood him up for a meeting one day. So that tells you something, too. I mean, he got this team fast-track going in the right direction. And had a president not stood him up, they could have gotten that worked out, and he never would have gone to Notre Dame, but that's not here nor there. He still had the – my takeaway was once a coach, always a coach. And even in your mid-70s, you're still dying to run a program. And in these jobs, it makes no sense to an extent because – you have so much stress. You don't have control over everything. The way the ball bounces is strange. You're relying on teenage kids and young adults to make a living. And yet the people that get into this business when they get out of it, the coaching business that is, they get out of it, they go on to do something else. You think all is fine. They would stop whatever it is they're doing in a minute for the right opportunity to coach because there must be nothing like it. There must be nothing in their life that compares to getting teams ready to play, individuals, all those things, and then competing on Saturday, Friday night, whatever it is. Because I can't tell you how many people that I've seen that have moved on in life, and if they would stop right now and go. I bet you Glenn Mason would come back and coach a football team if he thought if it was the right situation, and he wouldn't think twice about the number of hours it takes, all the stuff you have to go through. In a minute, he'd do it if it was the right situation. So I don't know how that lives deep within him, but I remember sitting listening to Lou Holtz that day, he and I talking for a long time about what the program would look like, how I'd go about it, all those things. And I thought, boy, once a coach, always a coach. You want this and you want this bad. And the fact that you'd have no personal life, you just don't have time, all those things, didn't matter. When you want a coach, you want a coach. And that's a heck of a way to go through life. And if you can maintain it, Holtz also had this saying, he said, if you don't have to coach, don't coach. And what he meant by that was, if it's not in your blood, if you don't feel a great passion for it, if you can't live without it, then don't do it. But if you have to have it in your life to be happy, then go for it. Live all over the country. Have playbook. We'll travel. All those things, go ahead and do. Go ahead and do. Go ahead and do all those things if it's in your blood. But if it's not in your blood, you don't feel it, don't do it because it asks too much of you and your family and everything else. And that's pretty good words to live by. Henry Lake and I will throw around the Gophers and much more when he comes in next. Stay with us, Sports to the Max at WCCO.
Sports to the Max.
Welcome back. Dave Lee, who does it and does it well. Tomorrow, 1999, 20 years ago, they beat Penn State. They said that Penn State. You know something? I think they had a good chance on Saturday, just straight up. I just do. Because they don't make mistakes. If you don't make mistakes, you're going to be in the game. If you're in the game, that means in the fourth quarter you got a chance. The fourth quarter you got a chance. You got a really good chance. 36 degrees in Minnesota and got the fans behind you. That's a pretty good chance, I think. We'll find out more on Saturday. But Dan Nystrom, a great singer back in the day. He was good. He was good. And I don't know what he's doing now today. I'd be interested to hear him with Dave Lee tomorrow. To talk about just that. A little bit of a shocker today on campus after the press conference for P.J. Fleck for because of, I'm sure, scheduling, whatever, and Williams Arena, they needed it tonight for the men's game. They played the women's team, opened their season this afternoon of all times, at all times against Missouri State. So the Gopher women's basketball team played Missouri State in their opener to the season. And for whatever reason, it was at 3 o'clock this afternoon. I guess if you're going to play today, that was the only time they could play. And they got beat 77-69. And no, I don't know a lot about Missouri State. I don't know a lot about what they've got going. I don't know a lot about that. I just know the Gophers lost 77-69. One of the guards from Missouri State scored 21 points. In posting that impressive upset to come into Williams Arena like that, the Gophers are a top 25 team. That doesn't happen very often. Henry Lake is with me now. He's just plugging in. And Henry, I don't know if you'd seen that score, but I just assumed your first game of the year, and they come to Minnesota. I hadn't heard much about Missouri State, that they wouldn't be that good, but they beat the Gophers and pretty much controlled from start to finish.
Yeah, today. I saw the score on the scroll. That's all that I know about it. I didn't see the game or anything like that.
Whatever. Yeah, it wasn't on TV, so.
I was sitting in the newsroom watching my Jayhawks as they took one on the chin tonight to Trey
Duke,
Jones and Matthew
Duke,
Hurd. Yeah,
he interviewed Trey after the game.
Yeah,
I didn't see how
sloppy
Hurd,
game.
Hurd do
it was
well
a sloppy.
Or-
Huh?
Did Hurd do well, or how did he do?
Hurd do well. Yeah, he did. He knocked down a couple of threes. It was, you know, it's an adjustment, clearly. I mean, going from high school basketball to big-time college basketball and the first time that you step out on the court. Imagine that for Matthew Hurd. Madison Square Garden. Think about that for a second. Madison Square Garden.
And this is your
and
first
you're facing
game.
Kansas. Exactly. And he looked good out
Lucky
there.
Lucky you got Trey Jones, your point guard.
Yes, yes.
I was talking to Matthew last year about when he visited Duke and saw Coach K. Coach K took him to, they take him to their house. Then Coach K has a house built right in his backyard just for his kids and when they want to stay. That's pretty cool.
It was cool to see him play because you can just tell all of the see all the talent that resides in his body. I mean, he's got a nice stroke. He catches and shoots really well, tall kid, whatever. So I hope that he has a very successful year in college basketball.
Yes. He could be a one-and-done guy. Who knows?
But to get back to your question or you asked me about Lindsey Whalen's squad tonight, man, that is shocking. Especially at, you know, Williams Arena. Yeah, so that's interesting.
Yeah. I mean,
that is rather interesting. Ace, Gophers come in at 17. Was that a surprise to you?
It was 13 in the other poll, so I thought they'd be higher.
No, I didn't think they would. The reason why I didn't think they'd be higher is because, well, this is what surprised me a little bit. The fact that there were six teams ahead of them with two losses.
Yeah.
What that tells you is that the people with the playoff committee with the college football playoffs, they're saying you haven't played anybody, which they haven't. But this is the good thing. It's all right in front of them.
Well, you got Penn State fourth and Ohio State first. And, then, of course, that won't hold up because they'll play each other. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to get bopped out of that. And the only thing that matters in that whole poll is if you end up in the top four.
Yeah, and Penn State. I mean, does that put this game more under the radar now? I think it does. Knowing that Penn State is four, they're ahead of Clemson. So now, Gopher fans, let's sell it out.
I did not think Penn State would be four.
I didn't think they would be two. No. I thought that they would be five on the outside.
Yeah, Ohio State I thought would be one. I thought Alabama would be ahead of LSU, and they're not.
Oh, I didn't think that. LSU has made a statement to be number one in the country because they played the toughest schedule so far.
Yeah, but I was talking to Irv Smith the other day. I said, that's your big rivalry game. He said, we beat them 8 straight times. It ain't a rival. They got to beat us sometime before it's a rival, and it ain't going to happen this year. Henry Lake up next on WCCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.